This program was recorded at InterVarsity's Following Christ Conference, held in Chicago, December 27th through 31st, 2008.
Stark.
Government and Public Policy, December 30th, Evening Track.
All right, well, we'll go ahead and get started, and if people trickle in, so be it. What Kurt and I wanted to do, we were talking about, from the beginning, our plan for tonight was a partial plan, and then we wanted to see how things progressed in the track, because we wanted things to sort of come together in a way that would make sense based on what has happened before. And so our plan for this evening, I have a few things to share, and then Kurt has a list of questions to throw at you to make you think for a while. And then we want to end sort of with some discussion, and at the very end, sort of moving us toward what are the next steps, where do we go from here? So that's kind of the plan. As you know, we started with kind of an outline of political theology because we think it's important for us to talk about our assumptions and to be thinking about the assumptions that we bring to the table when we talk about faith and government and public policy, even if we aren't cognizant of those assumptions, even if we aren't thinking about political theology, we are asking those kinds of questions, or at least answering those kinds of questions. And so we wanted to start with that framework. And then we had our two case studies to sort of give us an example, sort of getting our hands dirty, if you will, with sort of the complexity of these kinds of problems and how we as people of faith are going to deal with them and have different approaches, different responses, that kind of thing. And so now we want to sort of bring that together, not as if we can tie everything up in a nice neat ribbon and it's all fixed, but just sort of say, what does this mean for us as a group of believers who care about government and public policy, who want to bring our faith to bear, and given all these complexities and the fact that we don't always seem to agree, is there anything on which we can agree? So I wanted to start here, Kurt, I'll let you be my personal wacky. With a few ideas, I probably won't get to everything that was on the handout, but I made the handout before I got here. With just a few thoughts that I have wrestled through, I wrote a book last year called Beyond Left and Right. The subtitle is not my own. Helping Christians Make Sense of American Politics. Subtitle is written by my publisher because I don't think American politics makes much sense. But in any case. So I want to sort of outline kind of the central component to my argument there as a way of maybe getting us started, and then Kurt's going to sort of pick things up and sort of throw out lots of questions. My central point and what I think is probably for me is the most important biblical text about politics is not Romans 13. I think it's an important text and one we have to wrestle with, but I actually go to 1 Corinthians 12 and 13, and I think in these chapters, which talk so much about what does it mean to live in community, are really giving us a heart of how we should think about politics, as well as how we should think about so many other things, and really about how we should live the Christian life. So when we're wrestling with these questions and saying, wait a minute, we can't necessarily all agree about how to address this policy or what's the best route, I hope that we can at least come to some consensus about what are the virtues of living the life of following Christ, or following what Tom Wright was talking about this morning. If we are indeed the temples of the living God, and if we are trying to reflect some of God's glory, how might we be doing that? And so that's where I go to 1 Corinthians, and that's where I go to the famous passage that, although I think overused in weddings, is underused when thinking about politics. And just to remind us, love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part. But when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now we see only a reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. So below this are my four assumptions that I bring to politics and that I think are important principles to guide us as Christians. And they come in large part from this passage and others. And the first is this point that indeed, if we do see as a reflection as in a mirror, if we see in part, if we're told that there are partial, there's this partial understanding that fits very much with what Dr. Collins was talking about tonight. There's this partial understanding that we get to understand this side of heaven. We shouldn't expect to know everything with full clarity. And if indeed we only see things in part, then we should exercise a lot more humility in how we express what we know and how we understand things. And of course, I would say we need more humility in our politics. That's not to say that we can't have strong beliefs and that we cannot have great passion, and I think God gives us those passions, but we always need to have that humility that we don't have all the answers. God does, and that our vision is clouded because we are sinful creatures living in a fallen world, and this side of heaven, it's not all going to make sense. The second point I think is important is that I believe that the diversity of the body of Christ actually makes room for Christians to disagree, and I think that's actually something that we can celebrate, that the fact that we have disagreements may be, at least in my mind, is a part of how God created us and the uniqueness of each person and the way that God works in our hearts differently and gives us different passions can actually allow us corporately to work better in government and public policy if we actually sometimes go in different directions. A third point, and one that comes really more from the commandments, particularly the third commandments, is I think we have to be really careful about when we use that label Christian and what does it mean to take the name of God in vain. And when we apply that label Christian to something that's really a human endeavor, we're taking this holy name of God and we're using it in vain because we're applying it to something that is, it's human, it's broken, it's sinful. And so we need to be really careful. So I think we can be followers of Christ involved in politics. But if we say, my view is the Christian view, all of a sudden it strikes me that we're getting a little bit close to that violation of what it means to take the Lord's name in vain. The fourth point then, I think that sort of follows from this and really gets back again to the 1 Corinthians 13 passage, is that I see politics very much as a way of demonstrating love in action and building the body of Christ. We don't necessarily think of politics as a way to love neighbor, but really I think that's what government and public policy is about. We may disagree about how to love our neighbor, we may disagree about what that looks like, but our political systems and our government are designed to try to deal with these big social problems and try to come up with answers and ways to care for one another. Again, we may not always agree, but it is that way that we can show love. And if you think about the opposite of finding a political solution, it's usually a violent one. And if we can think of politics as a way of trying to avoid the violence, trying to come together in a way that promotes peace as opposed to violence, we can see that politics can actually be a really important means of showing our love. So again, just those are some of the principles that I have come to put forth when I think about Christianity and politics, and as a professor of political science at a Christian college, it's something you do all the time. But for me, it's really about who we are as we think about politics and how we try to be that angled mirror that we've been hearing about, how we try to reflect Christ and reflect God's glory, that more than anything, it's not as much what we think about politics, but how we express ourselves and who we are as members of the body of Christ. And if we can step back from our own positions long enough to realize that what's most important is loving God and loving neighbor and being there to be a witness for the gospel, maybe our view of politics would be a little bit different, and our battles might be a little bit different. So that's a little bit of where I come from. There's also this point two, I don't know really where it went, I think it was just a mistake. It's just a little bit about compromise, and we don't have a lot of time, and I won't belabor it, but it's there, and it was copied, and so I figured we wouldn't kill more trees by taking it away. But I do think that one of the things you find when you look at the public realm, and if you look at government and public policy, you'll find that at the heart of what we do in government is bargaining and compromise. That's at least in a democratic government. In a dictatorship, it's really easy. There's no bargaining. There's no compromise. You just do what the dictator says. But in a democratic system, it's about bringing a lot of people to the table, trying to come up with an answer that everyone can live with. It's never the ideal. It's always that bargain. It's always that compromise. And recognizing that when we're trying to bring religion to bear and faith to bear, we believe in truth. And if we are making truth claims from faith and bringing them into an arena of compromise, that's always going to be difficult. But instead of saying, well, it's difficult, therefore, why give it a try? What we've tried to sort of model for you and think about in our time together is what it means to bring truth claims to bear in that muddled, complicated world that requires bargain and compromise. And our hope is that as you go forward from here, that we will have at least sort of given you some ideas, some questions, some ways of thinking, so that you will be better prepared, or at least asking some more questions to help you wrestle with what it means to hold to the truth that we believe in this arena that makes it somewhat complicated. And with that, I'll turn it over to Kurt. Do you want to wait?
Because okay. One thing I've known from my students is once you make a handout, nobody listens to what you say.
Okay.
They only read the handout. So, which the handout is more interesting.
So tell me when.
Okay. So first, I will apologize to our brothers and sisters from other countries that my comments are more American-centric, and that's not because other countries are unimportant. It's because I'll keep my comments to the area of my own ignorance, which is American politics. And then second is just to follow in. I'm very dry sense of humor, so that was a joke. I always have to explain to my students that was actually a joke. Don't write that down. So. Second is I want to second what Amy said, that in many ways you could make the argument that the ultimate Christian virtue in politics is humility and service. And it's legitimate to ask whether that in the mind of the world characterizes how broadly construed those of us as evangelicals are perceived to engage the political dialogue in the United States. And I think that both the church and the world needs those of us who consider ourselves evangelicals to reframe and rethink how we engage the public square, because the combination of kind of aggressive power politics and probably historical amnesia makes our interactions less than helpful. So that's kind of why we wanted to start the whole discussion with theory. And it's not just because we love theory, because we do actually think there's nothing quite so practical as some good theory, which is to say, if we don't think about political theology, then how do we engage the public square? What is it based on? We all come with assumptions, and we all come with preconceived ideas. So this may have felt uncomfortable and overly theoretical for you, and our pushback to you, if you think we're too theoretical, is, okay, now you need to take this and go out. And so we will talk later about next steps. And the other thing I just want to say before I jump into my handout is, and Amy reminded us of this, is that everything we do in the public square as Christians is, in some sense, partial and provisional and temporary and subject to unintended consequences, and so we should enter with a degree of humility. But nevertheless, we should take the view, I think, that although progress is possible, perfection is not. And if we can keep that in mind, I think that would be helpful. So now we can do the handout. And what I've given you is more questions than answers, and that's the whole point. But this is incredibly, at one level, an incredibly complex enterprise to try to think about how we would intersect theological understandings, biblical understandings, with our conceptions of public policy. So let me just explain the handout. There's two series of questions. The top series of questions are things I think all of us should think about and wrestle with. And the bottom series of questions are things that I'm hoping the political theorists who are smarter than I am will wrestle with and help us think through. The top questions, I think, are almost mandatory for all Christians in the public square to come to some understanding of. And the second set of questions are more designed of, if you want to push deeper, these, I think, are the major problems and current questions, at least in American evangelical political theology. Such as it is, or American non-political theology, American political non-theology, or whatever it is, because we've kind of made the argument that at least American evangelicals don't necessarily have a coherent political theology. So I'll just say for 1 or 2 minutes the top questions, which I think we all should think about and work on, is and one of the key reasons we had us all go through the exercise of political theology is, I think Amy and I really felt the conviction that one of the real questions is, how do we as Christians who have deep theological differences and deep political differences find a way to talk to each other that's separate from the kind of verbal attacks that characterize most political discourse, and unfortunately usually characterize churches, right? And so it's kind of up to all of you as you go out to think about how do we talk together, how do we engage our differences substantively and not in a kind of violent sort of attacking sort of way. And that we really do want to think about what is the role of individuals, believers, and churches in promoting human flourishing. But then we also have to really ask ourselves, what is the task of the state and civil society also in promoting human flourishing? When I saw the theme of this conference, I said, oh great, the whole theme of the conference is about government. But there are many people who might take a different view, as government has a limited but special role in promoting human flourishing, whereas other people say it has the prime task. So these are things that we didn't answer, but we should all be working on. And then those of us who are scholars, we need to actually maybe start thinking to respond to some of the questions we propose, is how can we make political theology more relevant and practical? And then the question on which I know Amy probably disagrees is there actually a theological basis on which we can derive something approaching an evangelical consensus on politics? And I think it'd be fair to say Amy says it's probably impossible. And I'm still naive enough to think it might be possible. But that's a question that all of you can throw back at each other and really work at. And so even though the second set of questions are very juicy and we could debate them late into the evening, we're going to leave them aside to make you wanting more. And we're going to spend about 20 minutes and maybe longer if we can get the discussion going. And we'll stop recording the discussion.